Good afternoon, good morning, good day, depending on where you're listening from. Welcome to Profit and Beauty. Now, this show was created for salon owners who have decided to start running their salons like a business rather than a hustle. The focus of the show is to help salon owners understand the numbers behind their business so that they can grow and make extraordinary profits. Without this knowledge, it's really hard, if not impossible, for your salon to reach its true potential. My name is Desiree Anderson, and I have 19 years experience as a hairstylist and salon owner. I currently work as a certified public accountant, working mainly with salon owners and hairstylists. My background as a former stylist and salon owner gives me a much better understanding of what our industry professionals need and desire. So if you are a hairstylist or salon owner interested in running your salon like a business, then this show is for you. On the other hand, if you are a hairstylist or salon owner not interested in running your salon like a business, this show may or may not be for you. I just hope you keep listening and maybe something you hear in one of the episodes will make you decide to turn your craft from a hustle into a business that you can scale and grow. So sit back and enjoy this week's episode. Hi everyone. On today's show, I decided to repurpose a webinar that I did a few months ago. So this show is actually a recording of that webinar. I hope you enjoy the show and don't forget to download my app at the Google or the Apple Store. Thanks. Enjoy the show. The name of the webinar today is called How to Plan, Start and Grow Your Salon Business, presented by myself. And I'd like to start out by introducing myself to everyone. So my name is Desiree Anderson, and I am a certified public accountant located in the Atlanta area. And I'm also a former salon owner and a licensed hairstylist for over 19 years. So I have a lot of experience in the industry, both on the operation side as well as the business side. So now I help salon owners increase their business financial literacy by helping them to understand how financial management can benefit their business growth, as well as their profits. Now, I also I try to help salons identify the tax requirements and all with the intention of reducing your overall tax liability by implementing tax strategies that actually work. So in addition to all of that, I also provide continuing education classes for Georgia licensed beauty professionals. So now the reason I wanted to put on this webinar is to share with my fellow stylists the information about the business side of beauty and how what you need to do and what you need to do to plan, start, and also to grow your business. Now, this information is going to help current salon owners, if you own a salon, as well as aspiring salon owners, to understand some of the things that they really do need to know before or even after opening up a salon. So if you already own a salon, I hope to share some tips with you that will help you make minor adjustments, just to make small adjustments to enable your salon to actually start to grow. So now knowing how to do hair, I always tell people, really isn't enough when it comes to running a business. I've owned a few salons in my time. I've actually owned two salons. And I have to say the first one I owned crashed and burned. I mean, it did badly because what I did, I just jumped in. I didn't know anything. I just said, okay, well, I think I want a business. I just jumped in. I had absolutely no idea about the business side of the industry, and it just didn't work out for me. So today I'm going to be going over some topics that's going to provide, it's going to give you a pretty good foundation for planning, starting, and also for growing your business. Now, I broke this down into three parts: plan, start, and grow. Now, keeping in mind that the actual subtopics under the main topics aren't necessarily, doesn't necessarily represent planning, starting, or growing, but I just broke it down this way just for ease of delivery. So under plan, we're going to talk about creating a business plan and why it's important, which legal structure is best for your business, because I get this question a lot when it comes to opening up a salon, or people who already have a salon business wanting to know if they're in the right legal structure. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about picking a business model, commission, booth rents, hybrid, you know, whichever one you think suits you best. Starting a salon from scratch versus buying an established salon. We're going to talk about raising startup or operating capital. That's very important because we can't do anything without money. Sources of revenue, once you start your business, where is my revenue going to come from? Sources of expenses, who am I going to owe? You know, who am I going to have to pay in order for me to have this business? And then under growth, we'll talk about the break-even point, also putting an accounting and an inventory system in place, and also reporting for planning and growth. Okay, so creating a business plan. Now, as we all know, a well-thought-out business plan is going to help you do a couple of things. It's going to help you to determine who your target audience is, because you need to know who, you need to know that. What services are you going to produce or are you going to offer this particular segment? What are your key costs going to be? You want to know what your costs are going to be when you start a business. These are the things you need to start thinking about or looking at before you start your business. What are your projected profits going to be? Also, how are you going to run your salon on a day-to-day basis? Because when you decide to open up a salon, it's an idea in your head and you say, okay, I'm going to open up this salon and this is what I want to do. Now, when you actually sit down and you create a plan, it's like creating a roadmap telling you, okay, once I start this business, here's where I'm going to go with it. It allows you to stretch your brain, stretch your thoughts to make certain decisions. And at the end of the road, you may decide that you're just not ready to start a business. Okay, so a business plan has several sections, including the financial section. Now, the financial section of a business plan is made up of historical data or assumptions. So when I say that, if you're currently a business owner, you have historical data, which means that you can pull from the information that you already have. So you have revenue historical data. You have product sales historical data. So you can take this information and plug it into your plan. Now, in terms of assumptions, this will be for an individual who is just starting a business and who hasn't owned a salon. Therefore, you don't have historical data. But if you are a former stylist or if you are a booth renter, you have an idea in your head what certain things are going to cost. Or the type of money that you think you're going to make. So you can use those assumptions to start plugging in numbers. So now, so why is the financial section of a business plan important? Well, here are some reasons why the financial portion of a business plan is important. If you decide that you want to have future investors, they're going to want to see numbers. If you go to a bank, if you borrow from a family member, hopefully the family member is going to be savvy enough to want to look at some type of business plan from you. They're going to want to see, okay, if I invest in your business, how am I going to make money? Okay. Now, also, it's good for your own benefit so you can understand how you project your business will do, because you want to have an idea of how is my business going? If I decide to open up this salon, how do I think I'm going to do? Also, you want to create projected documents that look into the future. And these types of documents will be something like a sales forecast, which is going to include your sources of revenue, an expense budget, which is going to include your sources of expenses, a cash flow statement that's going to show movement of cash that comes in and out of the business, your projected profit and loss statement, a projected balance sheet. And with the projected balance sheet, you are going to determine what type of assets am I going to need for my business. Your assets are going to be your equipment you're going to use for the services, your furniture. Okay, so all the things that you actually need to start to run this business, you want to have an idea of what those are going to be. And then the liabilities are, what is it going to cost me? Am I going to be able to pay for this in cash? Am I going to need to get a loan out? The balance sheet is going to show you all of that. So you'll be able to see a visual picture of everything that you need for this business, all the assets you need, and then everything that is going to cost you. So this is going to really open your eyes and it's going to give you, you know, a better idea of how much money you're going to actually need to start this business. And also, let's not forget projected taxes, because I know, you know, several salon owners that sell products but they don't charge sales tax. They're not, you know, they just sell the products. You have to charge sales tax, because I actually did an audit a couple of weeks ago of a salon owner who was selling products who wasn't charging sales tax. And somehow or another, the Department of Revenue got a wind of it and they audited her. And she had to go back and pay sales tax for all of the products that she has sold in the past. The crazy thing was, she never even charged sales tax. So what happened was, she had to pretty much dig into her own personal funds to cover the sales tax. And also, estimated taxes is important for those of us that are, you know, individual business owners. If you're a booth renter, you do have to pay estimated taxes. I mean, by law, it is required, but, you know, in my business, I see several people don't really bother doing that. And what happens at the end of the year, they wind up owing more than they think they should. And it can get quite quite sticky. So the next subject is also a very important subject. It's which legal form is best for your business. Okay, so when you decide to start a business, one of the first things that you should consider outside of even raising capital is a type of legal business structure to form. Now, this aspect of starting a business is important because your legal structure is going to determine the type of tax return that you're going to have to file. It's also going to help you determine ultimately how you're going to pay yourself and how you're going to pay your workers. And also, you will understand, based on your legal structure, the overall information that you need to know to stay compliant with the state and with the IRS. Now, determining the type of return to file, if you're a sole proprietor, there's one particular tax type, or in other words, you file a regular 1040 with a Schedule C. If you are an S corporation, you have to file a separate tax return. If you're a C corporation, then of course there's a separate return. And as a partnership, it's something different. If you're a sole proprietor, the way you pay yourself is going to be completely different than the way you pay yourself if you are a S corporation. And even in some cases, even if you're a partnership, there's a difference. And these are things that you need to understand. So now, here are the most common legal structures. But before we go into that, I'd like to share with you something that I put together. And it is a little pamphlet that shows the business entity pros and cons. So if you decide that you want to start a business and you want to start, say, a sole proprietorship, or let's say a single member LLC, this information is going to tell you, it's going to give you what the pros are and what the cons of each type of entity is. And also, it also includes who is a good fit for this particular type of entity. Now, this is just something that is, it's very, well, what I would say is, even if you look at this, my advice to you would be to still speak with your accountant or your tax professional before you make the final decision. Now, this information is going to help you determine where you think you fall, but your accountant is going to give you additional information based on your specific situation. So it's different for everyone. And I would like to, at the end of the class, I'm going to leave a link in the chat box to this brochure, so you can download it and just take a look at it. For those of you that are trying to start a salon, or for those of you that already own a salon and you'd like to, you know, restructure your business and maybe even change the type of entity type that you have chosen. Okay, so let's go back to this. Okay, so here are the most common legal structures. You have your sole proprietorship, you have your single member LLC. Now, your sole proprietorship basically is this. You wake up one morning and you decide, you know what? I want to start a business. Okay, fine. You just start the business. All you have to do with a sole proprietorship is pretty much go down to the county and request a business license, and that's it. Once you have your business license, you're ready to go. Nothing else to do. So it's the simplest form of business. Your single member LLC is exactly the same thing as a sole proprietorship when it comes to the way that you're taxed. The only difference between the single member LLC and the sole proprietorship is that with a single member LLC, you have to go to, you have to apply through the Secretary of State for that particular designation. That's pretty much it. When it comes to taxes, there is no difference between a single member LLC and a sole proprietorship. Now, the question is, why do people choose single member LLCs versus a sole proprietorship? Well, here it is. I usually try to advise all of my clients who are salon owners and even the booth renters. I tell them you're better off going with a single member LLC. And here's the reason. As a sole proprietor, none of your assets are protected, nothing. So God forbid, if you're doing, let's say, highlights on a client, and for some reason you leave it on too long, or just whatever the case may be, stuff starts to happen and, you know, hair starts coming out. Or if you still do relaxers and you're at the bowl, next thing you know, water's going down the bowl and the hair is going along with it. I mean, that has happened to me in the past. So that could happen. And even worse, if a person gets like some kind of third degree burn while getting their relaxers, they can sue you. If you are a sole proprietor, none of your assets are covered, which means that they can come after every single thing you own, your home, your car, your firstborn child, everything. They can come after what you own. As a single member LLC, on the other hand, you have that level of protection. So what that does is it protects your personal assets, which means if that person decides to try to sue you, the only thing they can come after is what your business owns, your business assets. And this is why a balance sheet is also very important, because you also want to know what your business owns. You want to know if somebody comes after you, what can they get? You won't know the answer to that question unless you have some kind of balance sheet showing you what you own. Okay, so they can come after that. So which means that they can come after your the furniture, the equipment. They can come after what's in your business account. If you own a vehicle in your business name, they can come after that, but they cannot come after your home. They can't come after your personal vehicle. They can't come after your firstborn child. They just can't come after your personal assets. Okay, now that being said, I want to mention two very important things. One is, I am licensed to give tax advice. So I can tell you what the tax consequences are of any entity that you choose. When it comes to legal stuff like protection, I advise my clients to please speak with an attorney, because I know certain things, just the basic stuff. But an attorney is going to tell you, give you an idea of exactly what you are protected from, what you're not protected from. Now, the second thing is, even though as a single member LLC, technically, your personal assets are protected, there is something called piercing the corporate veil. What this means is, if you commingle funds, for example, as a single member LLC, one of the requirements is you have to have your own separate account. You cannot use your business account as a personal account. If you do, you're commingling funds. If you commingle funds, that means that you just pierced the corporate veil. Piercing the corporate veil means that now the attorney who is defending the person trying to sue you can go to court and tell the judge that your assets, your personal assets, are no longer protected because you pierced the corporate veil, which means that you didn't have a separate account. So even if you're a single member LLC, and yes, it is some kind of, it's a protection for your personal assets, there are still certain things you need to do to make sure that you actually, your assets are protected. And one of them is not commingling funds. That means you have to have a separate bank account from your personal. Okay, we also have a partnership. We all know what that is. That means if two or three people decide to start a salon, that they, it's now a partnership. Then you have the multi-member LLC, which is the exact same thing as a partnership, except once again, you go through the Secretary of State and become an LLC. So that sort of changes things, which means all of the partners are somewhat, their personal assets are somewhat covered versus a regular partnership. If you have a regular partnership, all of the partners, all of the general partners are at risk. Your assets are at risk. So it's important that you know these things. Then you have your S corporation, which it's a great option for certain reasons, and it's not great for other reasons. Now, I'm not going to go into detail about that because it's a little bit beyond the scope of this webinar. But before you ever create an S corporation, you want to definitely speak with someone. Then you have your C corporation, which, you know, most small salons that I deal with aren't C corporations, and usually just some franchises usually are, but for the most part, small salons do not operate as C corporations. Okay, so now we're going to talk about picking a business model. Okay, so now that you've chosen your legal structure, it's time to pick a business model. Different salon types have vastly different business models. So knowing the type of salon that you want is a big step in figuring out how much capital you're going to need to actually fund that salon. It will also help you understand where your revenue streams are going to come from, and that's very important. Okay, so we're going to talk about three models. One is the booth rental salon, which a lot of salons tend to go that way. Then you have a commission salon, and then you have some kind of hybrid. Now, with the booth rental salon, I'm going to go ahead and read what this says. I'm not crazy about reading stuff, but I'm going to go ahead and read this because I don't want to leave anything out. It's very important that if you are a booth rental salon, that you know these things. Okay, so a booth rental salon means that you're working with independent contractors. If you're going to work with independent contractors, make sure that you understand the IRS rules related to hiring independent contractors. Now, not knowing the rules can cost you huge back payroll taxes or payroll fees and huge penalties and interest related to unpaid payroll fees. Make sure you have a contract between you and your renter. Very important, have a contract between you and your renter. Now, technically speaking, each renter should have their own business license for the space that they rent within your office. Now, these are best, or rather within your salon. Now, best practices will save you if the IRS ever tries to reclassify your booth renters to employees. You want to protect yourself because a payroll audit that ends in a misclassification of workers can cost you dearly. And here is a scenario that I have seen. I worked with somebody for a payroll audit a couple of years ago. She had a booth rental salon. However, she didn't set it up properly. So one of her stylists got fired. That stylist decided to go to the Department of Labor and to try to apply for unemployment. Okay, so when the Department of Labor went through the information to find out if this particular salon owner had been paying in unemployment, they weren't. Okay, so now the question becomes, do you think you were an employee, misclassified as an independent contractor? She said yes. So what do you think happened? The Department of Labor opened up an audit on this person, wound up going to the salon and auditing the salon. By the time everything was all said and done, they determined that all of the booth renters were actually employees, and they went ahead and they reclassified each and every one of them. And when I tell you, the end result was that she wound up shutting her salon down because she could not afford the back taxes and payroll fees, the penalties, and the interest. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, because the Department of Labor reclassified, guess what they did? They sent that information to the state. They opened up their audits, and guess what? Now she owes the state. And guess what? Once again, the state informed the IRS, and what do you think they did? They opened up an audit. So this person had three audits going with the Department of Labor, the IRS, and the state. And she didn't fare very well because she didn't set up her independent contractors to make sure that they would pass the smell test as it relates to actually being an independent contractor rather than being an employee. So it's very important that booth rental salons know exactly how to do this. Okay, now commission salons, workers who are at a commission salon, workers should not be treated as independent contractors. Because really, technically speaking, a commission salon, if you have commission stylists, they're really employees. Because at the end of the day, your benefit is tied to how much money that they bring in. So if they bring in $0, you make $0. So that in and of itself makes them, in the eyes of the IRS, the state, and Department of Labor, that makes them employees. So that's something you should really think about. So if you have commissioned stylists, they're really W-2 employees and not independent contractors. And then you can have a hybrid salon where you pay an hourly wage plus commission based on performance. But ultimately, even if you pay them commission, you're actually paying them as employees. The next slide, we'll be talking about starting a salon from scratch versus buying an established salon. So before you start a salon or a business, it's a good idea to look at the options of either buying an existing hair salon versus starting a salon from scratch, or even purchasing a franchise. Now, all three of them have their advantages and their disadvantages. So when you buy a business, okay, you take over an operations that already exists. It's already generating cash flow and profits, as opposed to a new salon that has absolutely no financial history. Okay, so if you find that perfect salon to buy, you're going to acquire an established customer base, as well as employees or workers that are familiar with all aspects of the business. You won't have to reinvent the wheel, at least not at the very beginning. Okay, let's see. Now, one of the downsides, of course, to buying a salon business can be how much it costs. It's much more expensive to actually purchase a salon than it is to start one from scratch. But I would say, if you decide to buy a salon, it's also very important that you put together some sort of acquisition team. So an acquisition team is going to include a banker, an accountant, and also an attorney. Okay, so your accountant, what they're going to do is they're going to review the financials of that particular salon. Now, I always say, if you're going to buy a salon, make sure you know the truth about the income, the profits of that salon. And the best way to find out the truth, I always say, is somewhere in between the actual financial statements and the tax return. So what your accountant is going to do when they look over the information of that salon that you're thinking about buying, they're going to look at their financial statements and they're going to look at their tax return. Now, here's how this normally works. The financial statements usually are going to be overstated and the tax return is going to be understated. So somewhere in the middle is going to be the truth, because usually when it comes to your financials, normally you're providing that to future investors, maybe bankers. So you want to show that your company is making a lot of money, okay? So you might either actually tell the truth, or they tend to fudge the numbers just a little bit. When it comes to your tax return, you're trying to pay as little tax as possible. So therefore, you're going to try to take all the expenses you possibly can and show that you're not making a whole bunch of money. So in between there somewhere is the truth. So you want to make sure you have an accountant look at both. Let me just look at the financials and the tax returns of the salon that you're thinking of purchasing, so that you know what you're walking into. You want to know whether or not that salon is charging you a fair amount. And also, you want to be able to negotiate. You want to be able to negotiate that price. And you can't negotiate the price unless you know what the salon is actually worth. And as it relates to an attorney is going to make sure that there is no sort of lawsuit pending, that there are no liens, and that also there are no liens, there are no levies, no labor disputes, or no potential zoning changes. These are the things that you need to know, because if you don't know these things and you go ahead and purchase a salon, next thing you find out there's a lien against that property, well, guess who's responsible for that lien? It's going to be you. If there's some kind of pending lawsuit against a salon that you didn't know about, guess who's responsible? It's going to be you. So you want to make sure that you have all these things under control before you decide to purchase an existing salon. Okay, so let's say you decide you want to buy a salon. Okay, so you have to raise capital, right? So if you're starting a small business, chances are that at least part of the initial part of the funding is going to come out of your pocket. Before anyone is going to loan you any money, especially a bank, they want to see that you also have skin in the game. For you to have skin in the game, that of course means that you have to put some of your money into the purchase of the actual salon. Okay, but you may also need money from outside sources. So it's important that you understand, you know, the two main categories of such funding and the differences between them. Now, one category is loans or borrowing. Another category is equity investment. Okay, so under loans and borrowing, you have non-traditional loans. Now, a non-traditional loan is something that is a loan that doesn't require all of the traditional items that a bank would. So for example, let's say you have bad credit, challenged credit, not necessarily bad credit. Let's say you have challenged credit, or you've only been in business for a short period of time, maybe 6 months to a year. A traditional bank may not loan you money. Okay, a non-traditional loan is one that will probably not concern themselves too much with your credit. They may not concern themselves too much with your actual profit and loss statement and your balance sheet. What they're going to look at is they're going to look at your bank statement. How much money are you actually bringing in? And usually they want you to be bringing in a certain amount of money. And based upon how much money you're bringing in, it's going to determine how much they're willing to loan you. So a lot of these places have different criteria. But usually it's a lot easier to borrow money from non-traditional type establishments. And I have a few that I'm familiar with. So if anybody's interested in getting the information about the two people that I know that actually offer non-traditional loans, you can let me know and I'll be glad to send you a link for that. Now for traditional bank loans, that's basically what it is. It's a traditional bank loan. They're going to want to see make sure you have a good credit rating. They're going to want to see a profit and loss statement. They're going to want to see your banking information. So basically they want to see everything. They want to also make sure that you have assets. And not only that, even with non-traditional loans, they want to make sure you have assets, meaning collateral. Because with a traditional loan and a non-traditional loan, if you don't pay back, they're going to come after your stuff. They're going to come after whatever type of collateral that you have, you know, presented. Now, even if there is a particular collateral, so let's say example, they say, okay, we're going to use your equipment in your salon or your home as collateral. Fine. If you don't pay, they'll come get it. If for some reason that the collateral does not cover what you owe once they liquidate it, then they can take you to court and sue you. And when they sue you, they are going to be able to get a judgment, which then allows them to come after the stuff that wasn't part of the agreement, but they can come after that. And if you don't have anything, then they're going to come after future income. So if you decide to go to work and you start making money, they're going to come after a portion of that. Okay. So it's very important that you really think about, you know, when it comes to loans, you want to really think about it. You want to know what you're signing. Another thing is a line of credit. A line of credit, basically what they're doing is they're saying, okay, wait, here's $50,000, a line of credit, and you can draw from that credit as you please. Now, the big difference between a line of credit and an actual loan is that the line of credit, you do have interest, but the interest is only on the amount that you draw. So if you have $50,000 and you take out $10,000, your interest is going to be only on that $10,000. Versus with a loan, once they give you the $50,000, the interest is on the entire $50,000. So that's a big difference. And of course, you have your home equity loan, which you know what that is. I'm not crazy about that, but hey, that's an option. And then credit cards is also an option. I don't like credit cards only because the interest rates are way too high. But if you can somehow get a a zero interest credit for, let's say, 12 to 18 months. It's a great way to purchase furniture and do other things within the salon. And then you have your equity and your equity investor. Basically, that is a person saying, okay, I am going to invest in your business. Here you go. And they're going to want to see a financial plan, of course. They'll like to look at your financial plan, the financial section of your plan, as well as other sections. And they're going to say, okay, well, here is $50,000 for your business. Hopefully I gain a profit and get my money back. And if for some reason there is no profit, your business fails, with an equity investor, you owe them nothing. They lose, you lose. Versus with a bank, if you lose, they still want their money. So equity investors, and there are some equity investors that do say, that do want you to guarantee them something. And I always say, try not to do that with equity investors. With equity investor, don't guarantee anything. Just let them know, look, this is a great business. If you're willing to invest, I'm down, give me the money, and we're off to the races. And hopefully they believe in your business enough to do that. So never agree to give an equity investor a guarantee. Unless you're that, I wouldn't say desperate, but if you really, really, really need the money and they're willing to give it to you under those circumstances, then, you know, maybe you could do that, but I advise that you don't. And then of course, there's a seller of an existing business, which means that you can actually negotiate with the person who you're buying the business from and say, okay, I'll pay you this amount every month. Now, the longer you stretch it out, the less you'll have to pay. And it's easier to negotiate with a person who's trying to sell. And the good thing is, even if you stretch it out, pay a little bit at a time, if the business starts to do very well, then you can go ahead and just pay them off and be done with it. Okay, now sources of revenue. Sources of revenue, let's see, let me show you something. So of course, it's very important to know what your sources of revenue are. And I'm going to switch to a sales forecast spreadsheet. So this is a forecast spreadsheet, which contains sources of revenue. Now, the purpose of this is so that you can understand, before you start your business, you want to know what type of revenue is coming in. So if you're going to have services, I would suggest that you have two sheets if you're selling services and products. One for products, one for services, because you want to have an idea of how much you're going to make for services and for products. So let's say you decide you're going to have 50 haircuts a month. And I just went 50 straight across. So let's say 50 haircuts in January through December, which means that, and each haircut costs $35. So which means that annually, you're predicting that you're going to make $21,000 with your haircuts. Same thing with color. You can make the prediction how much you say, how many color jobs you're going to do every month, and then what it's going to cost you and what your annual income is going to be from that. Same thing with blowouts. And I included hair products on here just to make things simple. So let's say you have hair products. You think that you're going to sell 46 pieces every month. So which means at the end of the year, you would have made about $8,000 in products. So this sales sheet pretty much tells you what your total income for services, if it's a service sheet, or for products, if it's a product sheet, what you're going to sell at the end of the year. And that's what will be right in this spot here. Now, I always say these sheets can get really, really large depending on how far down you decide you want to drill. I say the deeper you drill, the more relevant information you have. And when I say that, what I'm talking about is, let's say you have color. You have forehead color, you have partial highlights, you have forehead highlights. When it comes to blowouts, you may have different packages. So if you break it down and you want to make certain decisions, you can say, okay, last year we did 2,500 partial highlights, but we only did, say, 75 full highlights. And you can see exactly how much it cost, how much you made from that. So you can make a decision, okay, do we need to do something to increase the highlights? I mean, our partial highlights or our full highlights? In other words, or do we need to eliminate a certain product? Because if you're looking at this information you can determine what you can keep, what you will keep, and what you can eliminate as time goes on, if you decide to use it as a moving target. But if you're just using it for a forecast, you can also break things down and make the determination of how much you think you're going to make with each product, with each type of service, or with each product. Let's go back to the slide. Okay, so basically these are some of the items that most salons have: hair care services, nail care, skincare, tanning, massages, retail products, booth rental, and so on and so forth. So depending upon what your business model is, once again, because now we've already determined what your business model is going to be, you can now figure out what kind of products you can have within your salon that will support your business model. Then we have our sources of expenses. Of course, you're going to have rent, payroll expense. If you have payroll, utilities, insurance, you want to create also a budget for this. So for the sources of expenses, you want to have an expense budget that's going to show you what you budgeted and what you actually spent. So let's say for advertising, you budgeted $3,000 for advertising, but you found out that you spent, instead of $3,000, you spent $4,500. Okay, so now this is going to tell you that you spent more than what you budgeted by $1,500, and it could be a good thing. It could be a not so great thing. This could mean that, so really what's happening is when you're doing your forecast, all you're really going to have is the numbers, the budgeted numbers within the forecast, okay? As the year goes on, then you can start to plug in actual numbers. So this particular expense budget, you can do it monthly, you can do it yearly. I would suggest doing it, of course, yearly when you're creating your business plan. But then when you actually get into things, you want to do it monthly. Or you can even create a monthly one. You can create a 12-month one that's going to show you 12 months. And then, of course, that way, for your business plan, you can see what you're anticipating for the entire 12 months. And of course, like I said before, you can't fill out the actual section because you don't know what's going on, but you can do the budgeted amount. And when you go back to try to figure out, okay, here's what I budgeted, here's what actually happened. And then you can look at that information and say, and make certain decisions or certain changes. Okay. The next section is the break-even point. So in simple terms, the break-even point refers to the level of revenue that you need to cover all of your business expenses over a specific period of time. Now, it is important that you know what your break-even point is. So as I said, as a starting point for any business, you should know, and you should also understand what your break-even point is in your business. Anything over that break-even point is considered pure profit. Okay, so this information is going to help you to see whether or not your business is actually growing. And if it is growing, at what rate is it growing? Okay, so if your break-even point shows every month that your business is growing every month, then of course you're doing something right. If it shows that it's staying stagnant, then you think you may want to do something to change that. If your break-even point shows that you are digressing, then you really need to look to see, okay, what's going on in my business? You know, why is my business going backwards rather than forwards? So one of the best uses, or some of the best uses for a break-even point analysis, you can also use it for different types of scenarios. So let's say, for instance, you wanted to hire a new employee, okay? So if you add another person to your payroll, how many extra sales dollars is it going to take to recover that extra salary, okay? If you decide to borrow more money, how much more will you need to cover the increased principal and interest in those payments? So these are the kind of things the break-even point can help you determine. Also, some salons actually like to calculate their break-even point on a daily basis. So if you're working with a team of people, let's say you have a commission salon, and you're working with a good team, okay, using your break-even points, you can actually use this information for targets. So it gives everyone a target to shoot for on a daily basis. And also, one other thing is, if you're looking at investment properties, let's say you wanted to buy some, you wanted to add new investments, you wanted to add new products, for example. So you want to add new products to your line, or you want to add new investments, new equipment, and that would be equipment, it would be furniture. Knowing the break-even points is important, because that will let you know, if you add these new items, how much are you going to need in dollars to actually break through the break-even point. So you've added more expenses. Now what do I need to break the break-even point so I can start to actually generate more profit? And then we have putting an accounting and an inventory system in place. Okay, so as business owners, you must know how much money is flowing in and out of your salon. So in order to track income and expenses, you need to implement some kind of accounting system. Okay, so the kind of system that you implement, it can be simple or it can be sophisticated, and it all really depends on your financial and your technical ability. Now, if you decide to go with an Excel spreadsheet, that's fine. So I say using a properly formatted Excel spreadsheet is one of the most simple but effective ways to track income and expenses. So with the right formulas in place, Excel is a really powerful tool that can help you manage your business finances. Now, if you would like to use an accounting system, which I strongly recommend, because in my opinion, you can get much better reporting from an actual accounting system. Excel is fine, especially if you're really, really small. Excel is okay, but at some point you may want to switch to some type of accounting system. So if you would like to use an accounting system, here are some of the ones that I recommend. There is one called Wave, which I've used. I used it when I first started my business. It's free, so that's always a good thing. It's a free financial software for small businesses, and what it does, it tracks your expenses and your income. You can actually send invoices with this particular system, and you can actually get paid. So if you send an invoice, you can also get paid directly there's a button, or rather a tab, that your clients can click, and they can make the payment directly from the invoice. So that's really great. And here is the link if you decide you're interested in checking Wave out. Here is the URL. Then we have QuickBooks Self-Employed, which is only $4 a month. And QuickBooks Self-Employed is mainly for independent contractors and for booth renters. Or if you are a really, really small business, then QuickBooks Self-Employed will work great for you. Because even if you're a booth renter, I don't care how small you are or how large you are. In other words, if you're a booth renter, you're making a little bit of money, or if you're a big salon making a lot of money, you need to track your income and your expenses. You need to look at reports. You still need to do what is required, because in order for you to make decisions, you have to see exactly what's coming in. You want to know what's coming in, you want to know what's going out. I don't care how small you are, you want to be able to track that stuff. So one good thing about QuickBooks Self-Employed, it's very, very affordable, and it works wonderfully for independent contractors or for booth renters. Now, you also have QuickBooks Online. Now, this is for salons that need more than what QuickBooks Self-Employed offers. And usually you can get QuickBooks Online from anywhere between $15 to $50 a month, depending upon the type that you decide to go with. Now, QuickBooks Online Plus version is the only version of QuickBooks that actually tracks inventory. So if you have inventory and you would like to track it, then QuickBooks Online Plus version is the one that you would want to use. Then there's another one called ZipBooks. I've never used ZipBooks. I just happened to come across it when I was doing some research. And there's a free version. So it goes from $0 to $125 per month. And it says that it gives you the tools and intelligence to take your business to the next level. But at the end of the day, if you can get it for free, there's no harm in trying it, testing it out, and seeing if there's something that works for you. And then finally, we have planning for growth. And planning for growth, the best way to plan for growth is to be able to see and to be able to know exactly what your business is doing. And you can do that using business reports, okay? So businesses are made or broken on the decisions that an owner makes. So if you make a decision that is not beneficial to your business because you're making it blind, because you don't really know, you don't even really know what the numbers are, or you have no reports that are helping you make these decisions, you're pretty much making these decisions in the dark, and it can be detrimental to your business. Okay, so in order to make an intelligent decision, you have to have some type of data to support your decision. So a report pretty much collects together important information. It makes it easy to understand, and it lets you make informed decisions based on that information. Okay, so to make good decisions, you need the right information presented in the right way at the right time. So in short, you need good reporting. And I like a quote. I like this quote by James Harrington that says, "Measurement is the first step that leads to control and eventually to improvement. If you can't measure something, you can't understand it. If you can't understand it, you can't control it. If you can't control it, you can't improve it." So basically, this is everything that I have said summed up into one single quote. Once again, no matter how small you are as a business, and I always use the booth renter because the booth renter is an individual, she does her own thing. I don't care how small you are, if you're trying to grow your business, you have to be able to measure what's going on. The only way you can measure what's going on is to make sure that you know what's coming in and out of your business. To know what's coming in and out of your business, you have to have some type of reporting system. In order for that reporting system to even mean anything, you have to be able to gather the data, which is the income and the expenses, to be able to do this. Now, one good thing with technology now, especially with QuickBooks Self-Employed, you can actually set it up where it's absolutely automated. So all you have to do is get it set up. Once it's set up, and once your bank account is attached to QuickBooks Self-Employed and even to QuickBooks Online, you can create rules that allows the information that comes into the system to go exactly where they're supposed to go, to the correct reports that they're supposed to go to. So what that does is it takes away 85% of what you would ordinarily do manually. Because at the end of the day, I understand as hairstylists, we're creative people. You know, we want to do hair. Nobody has time to be sitting around trying to figure out, you know, accounting stuff or bookkeeping stuff. You know, let someone else do that. So with these, with QuickBooks Self-Employed and with also QuickBooks Online, you can set things up where it happens, it's automated. So it just does it for you. And that way, all you have to do is press a button and you get your reports. So keep that in mind as you try to grow your business. Now, if you're the type of person that is 100% satisfied with where you are, and you don't want any growth, you just want to stay right there, then okay, that's fine. But if you're an individual who, for some reason, you're trying to grow your business and you're wondering, why am I still in the same place as I was 5 years ago? Why am I spinning my wheels? What's the problem? Well, usually the problem is that you're not really paying attention to the business behind the beauty, and therefore things are staying the same and they don't seem to be changing. So that's the end of the webinar, and the floor is open for questions. I hope you enjoyed the recording of my webinar, but most important, I hope I was able to answer some of your questions. Now, I know starting a business can be quite overwhelming, so the more information you have in your tool belt, the more chances your business will be a success. So don't forget to download my app from the Apple or the Google Store. Take care, everyone, and I'll talk to you all next time. Have a great day.